The F-22 Raptor is making its combat debut against the Islamic State in Syria this week. The F-22 project cost about $70 billion over a decade. The Pentagon expects the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter to be combat ready in 4 years, and it's already the most expensive weapons system in Defense Department history. Kerry Russell's Director of Defense Capabilities and Management Issues at the Government Accountability Office and my guest on Pentagon Solutions today. He estimates the cost of running the JSF program after DOD activates it for combat to reach up to $1 trillion. Kerry, it's great to have you on the program today. You looked at the F-35 sustainment piece for the House Armed Services Committee. What specifically were you looking at? Not, it appears, the cost of procuring the planes themselves, but it looks like you were looking at what happens after they're already flying in the skies officially. Am I on target there?
Yes, and thanks. Good to be here. Yeah, essentially that's exactly right. I mean, traditionally about 70% of the life cycle cost for a weapon system is in the sustainment phase. And as you know, that's the cost to maintain and operate, so to speak, own it after it gets fielded. And so in this review, what we looked at is we looked at how well DOD was planning for that sustainment phase of the F-35, as well as how reliable its cost estimates were for the sustainment cost.
So you get right to it, and my eyebrows raised in the very first sentence of the report. You write, DOD currently has or is developing several plans and analyses that will make up its overall F-35 sustainment strategy. And I wonder, I'm no auditor, and I'm certainly no weapon system expert, but it strikes me that maybe one of the issues is why they're not doing it all together and all at once.
Well, I think that's standard for developing. You know, as you go through the development phase, you have to kind of build on what you know. And so that's not atypical to come up with a series of products and reports and plans as you move down the line. I mean, I think the issue here is that there's several risks to affordability that have been raised, and particularly looking at the quality of the cost estimates is an issue. But I think overall is knowing what exactly you can afford. I mean, one of the issues we found is that underlying all the sustainment strategy is that DOD has not tied affordability targets or developed affordability constraints based on the military services budgets, and that is informing those affordability decisions based on what they can actually afford.
So they've just decided this is how much it's going to cost, and because we need this aircraft program, we're going to spend that, and that's not connected necessarily to what else we might have to have in inventory and then spending in other areas.
Yeah, there are some of those gaps. I mean, I think as you look at it, to be fair, DOD does recognize that there's a question of affordability. In fact, some officials have come out and said it's not affordable. And they're looking to try to reduce the costs of the system and have reduced, or at least have come up with some affordability targets. But these targets are more or less arbitrary. Like, for example, one of the things they're trying to do is reduce the cost per flying hour by 10%. But again, that's not linked to an assessment of what's actually affordable and identification of what it is DOD and the services can afford with regards to an ability to operate this aircraft.
Well, and I wonder, too, that it doesn't sound like practicality has played a part of that. If you say 10%, that sounds like just kind of an arbitrary number. Do you have a sense that the things that they have done, that there's been some research and work behind them, that that's a logical and legitimate place to try to achieve savings?
Well, I think so. I mean, they've got a cost war room that has stood up with the contractor and with DOD folks, and they're looking for smart ways to reduce costs, and I think there's probably some traction there. But again, it kind of gets to where you're trying to go. You know, without an affordability target, you don't really have a benchmark for how far down do you need to go in order to make sure this thing's affordable.
You write, it's unclear whether DOD's O&S cost estimates for the F-35 program reflect the most likely costs that the F-35 program will incur. What are you getting at there, Kerry?
Well, essentially, you know, DOD's done a couple of estimates on the sustainment costs. One is done by the Joint Program Office, which is responsible for designing and building the aircraft, and the other by DOD's independent cost assessment organization known as CAPE. And as you mentioned, as we talked, it's up to about $1 trillion. Both estimates come in around that figure. So we took a look at both of those estimates, and what we found is that generally they're comprehensive in terms of including the types of costs that you would expect to see in such an estimate. However, one thing that's missing is DOD has not done an uncertainty analysis on the estimates in order to gauge the level of confidence that these estimates actually represent the most likely costs, or to come up with a likely range or how much these costs might vary. So it's difficult to know from these estimates how much risk there is in terms of whether these costs will actually reflect those future actual sustainment costs. In fact, we've looked at some of the assumptions behind those estimates and have indeed found some weaknesses that indicate that costs could go higher than what are in the estimates. A really good example of that is fuel burn rates. You know, fuel, everybody knows, is very expensive, and it's even more so when you're talking about jet fuel and the use of fuel on these aircraft. And what we found is that in the estimates, there's a fuel burn rate that's assumed to cover the full range of operations that the aircraft is expected to cover. But when we looked at actual consumption and actual use, where these units are being, or where these aircraft are being operated, at a very limited operational envelope, what we're seeing is that those current estimates on a limited basis actually are the same as the much broader cost in the cost estimates. So what that means is these units and these organizations such as the Marine Corps are not operating some of the more fuel-intensive maneuvers, such as landing on a carrier. And so what that means is the actual cost could go up significantly. Just to give you a point of reference, only as much as a 5% increase in the fuel burn rate can translate to about $4 billion in increased cost just for the Air Force fleet alone.
Kerry Russell's Director of Defense Capabilities and Management Issues at the Government Accountability Office, and writing and reporting on the F-35 program and the sustainment piece, the life cycle cost of the F-35 program, estimated to be as much as $1 trillion over the 56-year life cycle of the program. And when I think of the term life cycle, some of the things that you write about in this report, Kerry, really bring that concept home, because you mentioned some of the assumptions that you found some issues with. Two of them are part replacement rates and depot maintenance. I mean, you and the Pentagon both really are thinking of everything and contributing every piece of data that you can to figuring out what this looks like over the run of the program.
Right, we have looked at that. You know, parts replacement is a good example. Right now, the estimates for part replacement, or the actuals of part replacements, are coming in about 15 times higher than what one of the estimates assumed them to be. So it looks like the direction of parts replacement could add cost to the overall sustainment.
Did you get a sense of where the weaknesses in these assumptions were coming from, or were you unable to determine that?
It was pretty hard to determine exactly why it was. I think our recommendation really is to update those assumptions based on what's being occurred in actual practice. I mean, they could have underestimated it early on, but it needs to be matched up against what they're actually seeing and some realistic estimates of what might be expected.
The major recommendation that you make, it strikes me, if I were going to rank them, Kerry,
yeah,
is that the affordability constraints that we talked about
right,
in the beginning of our conversation, something that they need to address right away. Do you have a sense of what that looks like when they're able to do this in a way that fits more with what you'd like to see?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, we couldn't tell what the range is going to be or do the analysis ourselves. But basically what it should do is it should pin a range around that estimate and give you some level of confidence as to, when you look at that $1 trillion, how likely is that going to be the cost that you're actually going to see? What risk is there that's going to be variance, and what sort of plus or minus range might you see?
The Pentagon responded to your recommendations by saying they already conduct a form of uncertainty analysis. It strikes me, though, that based on your response to that, it's not the kind of uncertainty analysis you'd like to see.
Right. It's very specific. They looked at certain analyses. They did some what-if scenarios based on certain assumptions and tried to gauge sort of the variability of some of those assumptions. But what we're talking about is a comprehensive uncertainty analysis across the entire estimate. And that's a best practice for cost estimating, and really necessary to gauge a level of confidence and ensure you've got a reliable estimate.
Appreciate having you on this afternoon. Thanks for your time to talk about this work.
Thank you, Francis. Appreciate it.
Kerry Russell is Director of Defense Capabilities and Management Issues at the Government Accountability Office.